If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we'll look back on a thrilling National Road Championships in Redcar and Cleveland. 10 champions were crowned last week in North Yorkshire, in a championships that offered attritional road races, exhilarating circuit races, and blisteringly fast time trials. An emotional Fred Wright won a hugely popular victory in the men's road race, Ollie Wood delivered a masterclass in solo riding to win the men's circuit race, and the young prince of British time trialing was crowned king when Josh Tarling, the reigning junior world time trial champion, added the British elite title to his palmares. Pfeiffer Georgie was anointed queen of British roads for a second time following her 2021 title-winning victory on Lincoln's cobbled Michaelgate climb. She delivered an eerily similar triumph on the switchbacks of Saltburn Bank. Lizzie Holden completed the British women's time trial podium by winning the 2023 title, having finished third last year and second in the under-23 race in 2019, while Megan Barker proved elder sister Eleanor is far from the family's only cycling talent, with a brilliantly taken sprint victory in the women's circuit race. Now joining me to discuss all of these topics and many more is my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Hi Tim, I am just about getting over the Road Championships. What a phenomenal few days that was.
Well, we gave it a good billing, Phil, in our previous episode, and it certainly lived up to our advance notices. Enthralling racing, testing courses, television coverage. I mean, it had the whole nine yards, didn't it? We'll discuss all of these separate points in some detail today. Let's review the event in chronological order, shall we? The championships opened on June the 21st with the time trial. And I guess the big story here, Phil, is the coronation of Josh Tarling from Ineos Grenadiers. He won the elite men's time trial ahead of Fred Wright of Bahrain Victorious, and Connor Swift, his Ineos Grenadiers teammate. I mean, let's just put this into perspective. Tarling won the title by completing the 41.1-kilometre course in a time of 48.50.430, or an average speed of 50.498 kilometres an hour. That's 31.37 miles an hour to you and me, Phil. I mean, the mind boggles.
When I saw those speeds, Tim, I was just thinking about some of the rides I do on my bike and when I come back with my own average speed and just thinking, have I ever achieved an average speed of 31.37 miles per hour unless I'm descending a 20% gradient? Probably not. Quite phenomenal. I think Tarling clearly is a rocket on a TT bike. Incredible performance. And when you look at that difference between where Tarling was and where effectively Fred Wright ended up, the maths tell you there's basically a 2.1% difference in their average speed across that distance. So when we talk about time trialing particularly, we're always talking about these tiny, tiny differences, aren't we, that kit and technology make, whether it be a skin suit technology or a helmet or wheels. Your CDA is everything. That's your ability to be aerodynamic. So clearly, Tarling is really benefiting from having Dan Bigham in that team, advising on all of the aero TT setups. So that was quite something. And then when you look at the difference between Connor Swift and Fred Wright, it was only 0.2% difference between the two individuals. So you can see equally, Connor, you know, riding very, very well, but also benefiting from all of this knowledge and all this background expertise that now exists in the Ineos team. So I think within all of that, the big story here is Tarling, clearly an incredible TT talent.
I mean, I know the whole world is making the same observation, Phil, but Tarling is Ganner-esque, isn't he? He's visibly more powerful on the bike than his rivals in the way that Filippo Ganna is. And I think it's more than just his stature. It's more than just, you know, a resemblance to Ganna in silhouette. It's just that Tarling looks more powerful on a TT bike than anybody else on the course. And the results back that up, here's a question for you. How good can Tarling become? I mean, we've got a World Championships coming up in Glasgow in just under 2 months' time. He's competed at elite level at the British Championships. He would qualify, of course, as an under-23 for the Worlds. But do you think British cycling will allow him to compete for the elite world title? Is he that good already? Or is it important not to rush Tarling? It's quite an old-fashioned notion, I know, given that we're in the Remco era.
My view is, with all of these things, is if you've got the talent, then you've got to go in. Clearly, Tarling is capable to compete for the under-23 title, but look what he's done here in the seniors in the nationals. So you've got to look at him and say, I think he is ready. Would he be a candidate potentially to take the Worlds? I'm not sure at this stage. Would he be capable in the future? Definitely. So I think it's watch this space.
100%. I mean, to win the elite world title, he'd have to beat Remco Evenepoel. He'd have to beat Primoz Roglic. He'd have to beat Wout van Aert. He'd have to beat Filippo Ganna. I mean, it's another magnitude, isn't it? But in light of his achievement last week in North Yorkshire, you know, nothing in the sphere of time trialling seems to be beyond Tarling. It's going to be a wonderful career to follow. And what a privilege as British fans to be in on the ground floor, so to speak. Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of Brother UK, sponsored VeloUK.net. Well, Larry's championed Tarling for several years, isn't he? And I think it's becoming increasingly clear to the rest of us that he could just be the best British time trialist since Brad Wiggins. Another huge story from the National Time Trial Championships, Phil, was the coronation of Lizzie Holden as the elite women's champion. I saw some brilliant pictures posted on Larry's social channels last week, and Lizzie seems to have grown up on the podium of the National Time Trial Championships, both as an under-23 with drops and more recently as a fully-fledged professional with UAE Team ADQ. Now, Lizzie was second in the under-23 Time Trial Championships in 2019. She was third in the elite category last year, and now finally she's an elite British time trial champion.
Yes, a really incredible performance by Lizzie, and I think we're all rather delighted for her, given that she clearly is somebody that has just been improving and keep chipping away at it year after year after year. So I don't think there's many people in the domestic scene are going to be too unhappy to see Lizzie Holden jump on the podium there. And of course, again, a fantastic average speed, 27.58 miles per hour that she completed the time trial course in. So it clearly suited her. She put a fantastic effort in, and good luck to her. Personally, I'm going to be very delighted to see her riding in the stripes.
Now, the two other champions crowned in the Race of Truth were Josh Charlton of St. Piran, who won the men's under-23 title, and Maddie Leach of Life Plus Wahoo, who was crowned women's under-23 champion. Now, the time trial is a ruthlessly unsentimental discipline. It isn't called the Race of Truth for nothing. But one rider who fulfilled an ambition when she rolled out of the start house, if not quite living a dream, was Brother UK Orientation Marketing's Rachel Brown. Now, Rachel is an elite duathlete, and the significance of that will resonate with anyone who's followed Claire Steele's career, and she's determined to develop her cycling skills. When she initially applied to compete in the National Time Trial Championships, she was the sixth reserve. As the time trial drew nearer, however, things changed. Here's Rachel.
I set off as sixth reserve on the start list, so I genuinely didn't think I'd get an opportunity to race. And then as the weeks went by, I gradually ended up as first reserve. That was the day before the championships. At 4 p.m, I made a call to British Cycling and they said, yeah, you're first reserve and you could turn up on the day, see if you get a ride. So that night I decided to take a gamble, got the bike sorted out and drove across to Croft on the Wednesday and hung around the start list till the close at 12:05, and one person hadn't turned up. So at 12:05, I got given my number and a start time of 1:07. So I didn't have long to get myself prepared or even check out the sort of technical section of the course. It was very rushed. Did a little bit of a warm up and got myself to the start. And at that point, I'd forgotten to put on overshoes, but I was just really happy to be there. So it didn't matter. I was set off behind Katie Archibald, which was quite cool, and I knew I wouldn't see her again at any point. As I finished, we were actually parked opposite the live timing board, so I was able to see what my time was. But at that point, the faster riders hadn't set off. So I think I was eighth fastest at that point. But of course, the faster riders were behind me, so I knew that that would definitely change. To finish 25th, I was really happy with that. And I think for me, being a reserve rider, it kind of confirms that I did deserve to have a place on the start list.
Well, it didn't seem like 5 minutes had elapsed from the time trial podium ceremonies before the circuit races began. In fact, it was 2 days before the championships reconvened in Redcar Town Centre and on its esplanade for some thrilling Friday night entertainment. 2 races, one each for men and women, no under 23 category here, reminded us of just how much we'd missed crit racing in the enforced absence of the Tour Series. Both the men's and women's pelotons raced for 55 minutes plus 5 laps on a 1.1 kilometre course with just 6 corners. It wasn't only the time trials that were fast and flat. The women's race offered high speed and high drama, plot twists, shifts in momentum, and an exhilarating climax. It might be easier, Phil, to list what the women's race didn't have.
Well, it had everything, didn't it? I think we've got to say that the real race was the last 10 laps, wasn't it, Tim? And that's where the race actually regrouped, restarted, and was raced from, was a 10-lap race following a major, major crash. I've watched that time and time again, and from what I can see, what it was a touch of shoulders just in the bunch. Somebody got slightly biffed, and then what that then did was bring down a huge group of people, and clearly we saw some severely hurt riders. The race was suspended, of course, then restarted. But in amongst that drama, of course, what we'd also seen is prior to that happening, Katie Archibald almost ride away from everybody. And I thought, that's it. Katie Archibald, she's just going to win this hands down. She looked in incredible form. And then she overcooks it into a corner, goes down. The bunch go past her again. And then the question was she lapped? She goes back to the pits. Then the race gets stopped. Katie Archibald gets back on the circuit, unlaps herself and gets back on the line. And at that point, I wasn't sure whether she could restart or not. I wasn't sure of the rules. And of course, the commissaire there quickly had clocked on at what happened. And so Katie was pulled from the race. So I guess the issue here is, if the crash didn't occur, do we believe that Katie Archibald would have ridden away from the field? My own feeling, probably she might have, because I thought she looked incredibly strong and the bunch wasn't very organised actually once she'd gone off to chase her. So maybe that would have been Katie Archibald running around in the stripes. And then, of course, we get to this dramatic reset with a race suddenly with 10 laps to go. And of course, everyone's just going to go for it, aren't they? Anybody that had been dropped previously, you're now all reset. You've had a chance to have a drink, a gel, to get reset. And then, of course, it was all the guns went off and it was absolutely flat out racing. What we did then see emerge from there is Meg Barker finally take the circuit champs with that sprint in the final 100 or so metres there against Kat Ferguson. And of course, Maddie Leach launched that sort of final push in the last sort of 300-400 metres, and you thought she's going to go away now. So it all came together and it was a very, very exciting end. But clearly, Meg Barker of Team Inspired, we saw her at the Tour Series, didn't we? Very, very strong track rider, very strong seated sprinter. Her class came through and she took the championship. But there was just so much going on in that women's race. Literally, it was all over the place, wasn't it? And it was exciting to watch. The circuit looked ever so fast. And congratulations to Meg Barker, a worthy winner.
100%, yeah. I mean, not only have we seen Meg Barker win in the Tour Series, we've seen her win in that fashion. I remember a couple of years ago watching her let Sammy Stewart lead the peloton round almost all of the final lap in Sunderland. And then she sort of effortlessly moved out of Sammy's slipstream with about 300 metres to go and won the sprint comfortably. She sort of mastered that art of hiding in plain sight. After the women's crit race had finished, Phil, I thought, well, this is going to be the race of the championships. And if it hadn't been for two magnificent road races, it probably would have been. I mean, it had absolutely everything, including, as you say, this added drama of Katie Archibald attempting to rejoin the race after she'd crashed out. I agree with you. I think if she had been allowed to continue, or more pertinently, if she hadn't crashed, then for me the race was already over, even at that early stage. She looked absolutely formidable, different, even on the bike, to everybody else. Flat-backed, you know, incredibly aero, incredibly powerful. I was doing a Twitter commentary on the Brother Cycling channel and I posted champion on a mission, and that was exactly what it looked like. Boy, have we missed crit racing in this country, Phil. I mean, with the absence of the Tour Series, it's like that Joni Mitchell song, isn't it? You don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Absolutely, Tim. It was exciting, wasn't it? I think what made it particularly exciting was just there was so much drama, not just in the women's race, but the men's race too, which I know we're going to come on to there. But like you, I looked at the position of Katie Archibald on the bike and she was aero. The watts that must have been going through that chain must have been unbelievable. Her speed was just incredible. She was in the zone. She was in the flow. And when she hit that corner, and I just thought, no, as I saw her go down, and she went down hard as well, right into the barriers, I thought, oh, it's such a shame, because I genuinely think she would have emerged as the national champion. She looks great. It's great to have her back and really showing us what her true potential is. She is still one of our best crit racers and one of our best track riders, without a doubt.
Another star of the Women's Nationals crit race was Sam Fawcett of Hutchinson Brother UK. And my goodness, what a ride. Sam is 39, and by her own admission, she's not among the younger competitors, but she was equal to any of them and absolutely ice cool through the entire race. Crashes, restarts, you know, none of that affected her composure. She rode in the first five wheels for almost the entire race and then unfortunately got bumped out of position on the final straight and finished 10th, but still a very impressive performance. She's a really classy rider. Finished on the podium, of course, at last year's Guildford Town Centre races. That's another high quality crit that's been elevated from National B to National A and will be included in this year's National Circuit Race Series. Well, let's hear now from Sam on her top 10 performance in domestic cycling's most prestigious crit.
The course wasn't that fast nor technical, to be honest. I was hoping it would be slightly more technical. I definitely prefer the more technical, the sharper corners, maybe some cobbles in there. I definitely find that a much better and more challenging circuit. It was quite a flowing circuit. So if you're on the front, you could literally take every corner without really having to touch the brakes. And there was maybe one slightly sharper corner up the top end before you went down onto the finishing straight. But other than that, it was a really nice swooping circuit. The first half of the race was tough. I wasn't necessarily as where I wanted to be. And it took a little bit of time to move up and kind of get into the flow. But once I found myself at the front of the race, it was quite comfortable and it was quite easy to maintain that position. Once you're at the front, you were really not having to do as much work and you can swoop through those corners and hold your position a lot better. So once I got up there, my main strategy was just to stay up there. And then coming into the last lap, things really kind of got going. So I just knew I had to move up as quickly as I could. So I spent the last lap really just trying to move up as best I could. We managed to get ourselves into quite a nice group before the main crash. And then I think there was quite a small group of us that got away that managed to get around. Maybe about 10 of us, I think, that got away on that lap. Unfortunately, there were a couple of riders who were injured, so they had to obviously stop the race. But that gave some of the lapped riders and also some of the girls that came down that weren't so badly hurt a chance to get new bikes and get back on. That could be seen in two ways. For me, it didn't present too much of a problem because I knew that the stronger riders could maybe carry on. But it did give the others an opportunity to, and obviously the group then became bigger. So obviously you're racing a bigger group again. It swings and roundabouts in that sense. It definitely made for an interesting race. And I just knew once they started that race again that I had to make sure that I was back up the front holding for those 10 laps. It was only a short restart. So I need to make sure those 10 laps were going to be fast. You always hope that maybe there'd be an opportunity that you could win the race. I've always very much been a rider who rides for others. First Nationals I did, that was kind of my role. And then in my previous team, I kind of took on that role for myself. It was never really given to me. I just kind of enjoy that role. I rode out in Belgium the week and before the Nationals for the very first time, believe it or not. And that gave me a really good confidence boost in that race. But in particular, I think there was 170 starters and only, I think, 50 finished. And I was able to finish within that 50. So that gave me a real confidence boost that, you know, I had the strength to kind of be up there. So I definitely went into this race with a very different mindset. We only had two riders in the race. So that gave me a real opportunity to maybe focus on myself a bit more and ride for myself and get myself into a good position. I went into the last corner, kind of third or fourth wheel, when I was in a really good place. And unfortunately, there was a knock of wheels and a small come down, which pushed some of the riders back. So as we went into the finishing straight, we were slightly off the wheels, which is a real shame. But I have been working on my sprint. That is something I've been working on. So I'm hoping I will have another opportunity to maybe see how I get on. Definitely felt the absence of the Tour Series. Last year in particular, it took me a good few rounds of the Tour Series to really get my racing legs. So I think a combination of obviously breaking my collarbone in the March And then also not having the Tour Series to get you race sharp, really, find my race legs. So definitely it was a concern. But like I said, I've been racing quite a few men's races. And also went out, I made myself go out to Belgium that weekend before last, really to throw myself into the deep end and just see where I'm at. You go into it apprehensive, I suppose, because you haven't had that chance to line up with these strong girls and see where you're at. So to go into it a little bit blind, I'm not sure if ignorance is bliss sometimes, to be honest. You kind of just go in and race your best and hope for the best. So it was a really, yeah, it was a really good result.
Well, wonderful to hear there from Sam Phil. Ice cool under pressure and now with a richly deserved top 10 finish at a national championships on her Palmares.
Yeah, well done, Sam. A truly fantastic performance. And I could see Watteau in the pitch cheering on all the riders. One other sort of insight that I thought was very interesting is actually we saw Das Hansling with big numbers. And actually, I was probably expecting bigger things from the size of that squad, all very, very capable riders. And obviously what we saw is post-crash, one of their strongest riders, Sammy Stewart, taken out in that crash. So she obviously didn't finish. So as a result, then with that sort of 10-lap final race, we saw a fourth, a fifth and a sixth from Das Hansling. And I would imagine they would have had their eyes on at least a podium place for one of their riders. And equally, I was also looking where Joe Tindley was within all of this, because of course, Joe, again, one of our most capable crit riders, former national champion, former holder of the jersey. I'm sure Joe probably after the restart may have felt disappointed not to have made the podium. And I was too, because I think she's a very popular rider. She's popular in the bunch. I'd love to have seen Joe on that podium.
Yeah, I mean, the final insight leading on from that, I think, is to applaud the tactical element to this race. I'm sort of thinking of starting a one-man campaign to celebrate crit racing at the top level. You know, it's often referred to pejoratively, isn't it? Often seen as little more than thrashing around a town centre and compared unfavourably with Grand Tour racing, which is hardly a fair comparison. But, you know, we saw everything at the national championships, as I say, including really high quality tactical approach. Das Hansling, you know, you're right when you say they'll be disappointed not to have come away from the National Circuit Race Championships with at least a podium. They lost three riders in that massive crash that stopped the race. Ironically, the whole incident began with one of theirs. It was Emma Jeffers who, through no fault of her own, triggered that chain reaction. But, you know, they lost Sammy Stewart, they lost Grace Lister, and they lost Lucy Lee. More positively, Sophie Lewis played a policing role for Das Hansling to perfection. She never once hit the front, never once took the win, but was always in the first five wheels, usually second or third, and ready to shut down any dangerous moves. In Monica Greenwood, she played a similar role, and they looked really well placed to come away with at least a podium until their numbers were severely depleted by that crash. But their tactical sense, and we're seeing that now, aren't we, at the highest level of crit racing, in addition to everything else, in addition to the speed, the bike handling, the incredible cornering, all the rest of it, we're seeing a real tactical awareness. We saw it from Joe Tindley, saw it from Sam Fawcett, who was always near the front but never on the front. Compare and contrast with Frankie Hall of Loughborough Lightning, who went off like a firework. Wonderful to watch, you know, a real treat for the fans, but you couldn't help but wonder, you know, what was her aim in doing so much of the work? Now, somebody who got it absolutely right from start to finish was Ollie Wood, who rode to a convincing solo victory in the men's road race. He has no team, believe it or not. He was a member last year of Tim Elverson's With Sun God team and effectively lost his team when AT85 folded in March. He delivered a masterclass to win this race ahead of defending champion Matt Bostock of the Black Spoke Cycling Academy, who unfortunately found himself caught up with Groupama FDJ Sam Watson and the aforementioned Josh Tarling of Ineos Grenadiers. They sort of watched each other and took each other out effectively of the race. Those three, of course, were the podium finishers last year. Now Matt still managed to sprint to second ahead of Tim Shorman of Wheelbase Cabtech Castelli. Now, did Ollie Wood win this race, Phil, or did his rivals lose it?
My view is Ollie Wood won it, without a doubt. He was strong enough. If you only watch the post-race interviews that he did, going off was not his plan. He read the race and he went off. And next thing you know, he was beginning to get time. And we saw that time was undulating, wasn't it? It was going up and it was coming down, but then it was going back up again. As a pure racer, picked his moment to go off, and then he held it until the end. And absolutely, he won that race without a doubt. Because behind him, of course, everyone started looking at each other. And when I started to see him go off, I thought, unless that bunch gets organized quick, he is going to stay away. He's a good enough rider to stay away. And he did. And very interestingly, you could see that he had quite a lot of support around the circuit from fellow riders, people that know him. He's clearly a popular lad. And he kept waving his hand to his throat going, I'm not sure whether I'm going to keep this up. But he did. And he won that race in a very, very classy way. And, you know, for me, again, this is back to crit racing. It's a technical sport in its own right. It's fast, it's furious, and you have to be able to read a race in the race, don't you? You've got to be in the bubble and read it and make decisions on the fly. And he did. And he could see that that bunch was becoming a little bit disorganized, and off he went. Small gap, 8 seconds, 9 seconds, and then he stayed away because everyone just started looking at each other. So Ollie Wood, 100%, won that race.
Yeah, I concur with that. It was disappointing that there was so little cohesion among the chasing group, but Ollie can hardly be blamed for that. He certainly fulfilled his side of the bargain. And when you talk about reading the race, Phil, a brilliant example of that was when the rain came down and all Ollie had to do was stay upright. And I say all because, my goodness, you know, the pressure must have been intense to be faced with a downpour 50 minutes into a 55 minutes plus 5-lap race. Wow, my goodness. He was tiptoeing through some of the corners, and again, all relative, isn't it? Tiptoeing by Ollie's standards would have been railing it by mine. He was still travelling very, very quickly, but with proper respect for the changing conditions. That wasn't true for everyone. You know, Sam Watson, runner-up last year, he was one of several riders who slid out in the treacherous conditions. It would be very easy, I think, to run out of superlatives when discussing Ollie's performance. It was amazing. Now, here's a topic, Phil, that we might return to when discussing the men's road race. But this was another race where a lot of the top riders just failed to show up. I don't mean that, you know, in a physical sense, but a sporting sense. There were a lot of very high quality, very accomplished crit riders who didn't make any impression whatsoever on the race. Any thoughts on that? I mean, were they missing the Tour Series? It would have been the first crit race of the season, I guess, for many of them. But really, a lot of riders there that you'd expect perhaps even to have built a season around the National Circuit Race Championships, who were completely anonymous.
We definitely missed the Tour Series in 2023. So the hiatus, we all understand the reasons. We've discussed it extensively on the podcast, Tim. But clearly that has had a difference, that some of the form that riders need to really sharpen up their skills in crit racing, they haven't had that opportunity in 2023 as they normally would. And there were also a couple of big squads there, which equally I would have imagined those squads could have perhaps ridden a bit more tactically. We also, I think, really during this whole championship, I was expecting to see Geraint Thomas really show himself. I thought he was coming here post-Giro to definitely take the road jersey and carry the stripes of, you know, being the British road race champion into 2023. So I know we're talking about circuit racing for now, but I thought equally the absence of Luke Rowe in the crit racing, he is just a massive engine, isn't he? And we saw that on the road race, just how much work he was doing, which we'll come to in a moment. But that crit race really didn't play out how I imagined it was going to. I thought a couple of the domestic squads who had huge numbers there would get up the road, would control it, would do lots of 1-2s, would really, really impose themselves on that race. But I don't know, perhaps they were thinking of the bigger picture here of the road race and people sort of not wanting to go too deep, all that sort of stuff. But anyhow, I don't want to take anything away from Ollie, a deserved winner. Amazing that currently riding as a privateer. And I think if you saw his post race interviews, you see an absolutely lovely lad who deserves to have a contract.
Yeah, I'm sure he's beating off suitors with a stick at the moment, Phil, after that performance. I mean, what a ride. And more generally, what a circuit race championship. It's been part of the main event, hasn't it, since Lincoln in 2021. Circuit race used to be a standalone championships, and they put it alongside the time trial and the road race a couple of years ago. And I think it really deserves that status. Now, the circuit races, as we've said, would have provided the most exciting racing of the entire championships if it wasn't for two absolutely enthralling road races. Let's start with the women's race. Let's do it in chronological order, the order in which it happened. The women race for 132 kilometres of an absolutely grueling circuit, 7 laps, each of 18.8 kilometres, total ascent, 2,826 metres. This was a brutal engagement, even for the most accomplished riders in the race. Now, the race was won by Pfeiffer Georgie of Team DSM, who took her second elite British road race title after first being crowned champion in Lincoln 2 years earlier. Second was Claire Steels of Israel Premier Tech Roland, who continued her dream season. She came to the Nationals having finished sixth overall at the Women's Tour de Suisse. This is a former domestic rider now competing at the very highest level of the sport. And third was Anna Henderson, and of course, we know all about Anna, an absolutely world-class rider in every sense of the term. So what did you make, Phil, of the women's road race?
It was a very exciting race. And in fact, you saw just on lap one, it was already getting blown to bits, wasn't it? Because you could just see that the parkour and the ascent of the course was really affecting people very early in the race. And the stronger riders were clearly just going straight off on some of the climbs. And you could see straight away how the race was going to play out. Pfeiffer Georgie, I mean, wow, what a talent. She is just an incredible rider, incredible rider. But I will say within that I was delighted for Claire Steels. Claire Steels, through the whole race, I was thinking, this could suit her. This could suit her because, of course, she's familiar with the circuit. She's familiar with Saltburn. You know, she was a domestic rider for many years. And, of course, two of the riders out of the top three ridden on brother-sponsored teams. Tim, let's not forget that Anna Henderson and Claire Steels ridden on brother-sponsored teams. So clearly a lucky omen. But taking nothing away there, I thought Anna Henderson was also really up for it. It sort of all came back to Saltburn, didn't it? That epic finish at Saltburn. The showdown of who had the legs on that final climb. You could just see there that Pfeiffer Georgie really, really just had that extra something in her legs, that ability to lay down a big effort. And we talked about on that last podcast that that is about a 40-second effort on Saltburn. That's basically, you've got to be able to put in that final dig for those 40 seconds with, I guess, somewhere between, for the women, somewhere between a 600-watt and 700-watt effort for 40 seconds. And clearly Pfeiffer Georgie had the legs to deliver that. What I loved about that course was, I think for both the women's race and the men's race, the racing was so exciting. It was literally don't leave your seat. It was so exciting. I was literally on the sofa all day long on that Sunday. I hardly moved because it was just so exciting to watch. This is what we want from our racing, you know, just attacks and counterattacks and people having to use their heads without a DS screaming in their ear. If we think about kind of how continental races are raced, where you've got the big teams, breakaways allowed to go off, someone jumps on the front, controls the race, brings the break back, and then it all gets raced in the final 15, 20 kilometers to the shootout of the big names. The Nationals is racing nothing like that, is it? I mean, the women's race and the men's race blown to bits really quickly. Usual team cohesion completely goes out the window, and it really just became about who was the smartest and strongest rider on the road on the day.
It really was, and I guess the overarching conclusion is that the British style of racing is, in many ways, far more entertaining than that very controlled, very formulaic, often predictable style deployed in the World Tour. And it was interesting to see, I thought, just how quickly British riders from the World Tour reverted to the domestic style. I mean, the style practiced in this country and writ large in both of these championship road races is raw, it's aggressive, it's attritional, it's blood and guts, it's attacking from the gun. And the rider who attacked from the gun in the women's race was none other than a rider from Brother UK Orientation Marketing. That was Harriet Graham. Let's hear now from Harriet.
I did plan to attack as early as I could get to the front. I'm not naturally a particularly good climber. I'm working on it a lot with my coach. So I didn't really plan on even finishing the race because it was so tough. I think a lot of people felt the same way, but I wanted to go out in a blaze of glory, so I thought I'd try something early on. It was quite a surreal feeling, just being away from everyone. It almost felt like I was out on a ride on my own for some of the time, and then I kept checking back and seeing them all catching me up. It was quite scary. I had to kick on a bit more a few times. It was an amazing experience as well, all at the same time. I was really hoping a few people would come across and try and give me a bit of a break, but nobody did. So I just kept on going as strong as I could for as long as I could. I have to admit, I was a bit disappointed. I had hoped I would be able to stay away until the first descent because I'm a pretty confident descender. And I was hoping I could get another reasonable 20-second gap and get a good chunk of the climb up Salt Bank done before I got caught. But I maybe went a little bit too early and that meant I didn't have the legs to go quite that far. If I'd had some help, I might have made it.
Well, great to hear there from Harriet Graham, who attacked on lap one of the women's road race and gained some valuable exposure for her Brother UK orientation marketing team. It didn't take long though, did it, Phil, for the heavyweights to join the fight? The group that decided the race, that was Pfeiffer Georgie, Anna Henderson, Eleanor Barker, Claire Steeles, Anna Shackley, Alex Morris, and Natalie Grinshaw, they revealed themselves as the strongest pretty early. Just how good is Pfeiffer Georgie, Phil? I mean, is it too soon to start comparing her to multiple British road race champions like Nicole Cook and Lizzie Deignan? I mean, she doesn't have a world title, she hasn't won an Olympic gold medal, but she is still only 22 and already has two British titles on her palmares. She's won a World Tour race this season. She's won a UCI 1.1 race. I mean, it's easy to say with hindsight, isn't it? But shouldn't we have been talking her up even more than we did?
What a talent. She is just an incredible rider. And again, what I think I'm most impressed by is 22 years old. You can just see that she's getting better and better and better with every season that she races. And of course, now with Team DSM, I think she's in a really, really good place there, the right place to really bring her on as a rider. So I don't think we've seen anywhere near the true potential of where Pfeiffer Georgie might go.
I mean, as we sit here and talk now, Phil, a third title, a fourth title, it doesn't seem like fantasy, does it? It seems completely within her grasp. Pfeiffer, of course, will have left East Cleveland the most satisfied rider of the day, but who else do you think will come away thinking, I did a really good day's work there? Alex Maurice, for example, you know, talk about a career on fast forward. This time last year, she hadn't even announced her presence at the highest level of domestic road racing. It would have been another month, I think, before she finished second at the Lancaster Grand Prix in her National Road Series debut for Brother UK LDN. Now she's in the Women's World Tour with Canyon Shram, proving that winning a Zwift contest is just one small part of her repertoire. She more than held her own last Sunday. Anna Shackley, another just 22 years old, fourth overall at the UAE Tour in February. Each time the road went up in the Nationals road race, Phil, I thought she looked like the strongest rider on the road. Natalie Grinshaw, for my money, was the most intelligent rider in the bunch. I tweeted, never shirking, rarely working. She was always towards the back of that group. So who else, Phil, do you think will come away super satisfied with their day's work in East Cleveland?
Well, everyone you've mentioned, but I've also got to just come back to Claire Steeles. She was there on her own, didn't have a team around her. She's always suited the hillier courses when she's ridden in the UK. So she was very much known as a climber, somebody who prefers hillier routes. And I think for her to come in second, I mean, only 5 seconds off actually, Pfeiffer Georgie, after such a long race as well, you know, an attritional 132-kilometre race. It was not a short race, but it was a hard race. It was hard. And I think it was a very, very good performance from her. Really great to see how she's doing. Eleanor Backstead, top 10. Well done to her. She's still under 23 and riding with Trek Segafredo, so I thought she did exceptionally well. Monica Greenwood from Das Hansling. I think she actually came in on 13th. So well done, Monica. So I think that was a really fantastic performance again in amongst a very, very difficult day. There's a lot of people will be probably walking away from that race on that day. I think there were 33 finishers in the women's field overall. So, you know, that just does show that it was something to actually even finish that race. And I know there was a little bit of contention perhaps with some of the to finishers on the men's. I think we only saw 20 finishers actually officially on the men's. But I saw on social media there's quite a few unhappy riders who were pulled, who felt they could have completed the race and would have liked to have completed the race. So with such big fields, to see them whittle down to only 33 finishes on women's field, then fundamentally, then I think anybody who finished that race on that day ought to be giving themselves a pat on the back.
Well, let's move on now to talk about the men's race. I mean, my goodness, have you ever seen a race like it? Victory, as we've said, went to Fred Wright of Bahrain victorious, and it's hard to think of a more popular winner. James Knox of Sudal Quickstep was second. We're used to seeing James as a climbing domestique deluxe, but here he had, well, not quite a day in the sun because there was very little of it. But boy, did he show that he's a very capable rider in his own right. And then, of course, Stevie Williams of Israel Premier Tech rounded off the podium with another hugely courageous performance. It was an amazing race, Phil. Fred, understandably, very emotional following the recent tragic loss of his teammate Gino Maeder at the recent Tour de Suisse. How do you read the race? Have you ever seen a more attritional men's race than the one we witnessed last Sunday?
I'd be hard to pick a race out which had so much within it. Let me firstly say how delighted I am for Fred Wright. He is a very, very popular rider. He really needed this win. He's been the guy, hasn't he, that sort of just needed that big win, and he got it. You could just see that James Knox, Steve Williams, even Owain Doyle, Connor Swift, this was becoming a shootout between the World Tour riders, wasn't it? Right, who's got the legs today? And we saw also things like the weather begin to factor. You know, started out all nice, but then of course we had the heavy rain, the conditions began to deteriorate, and it really, I think, began to then see who really, really wanted this. And probably on that sort of final lap, when we began to see then Connor Swift get dropped, you could just see what Fred Wright needed to do. He needed to get rid of James Knox and Stephen Williams. He needed to get rid of them before the final Saltberg climb. He needed that 8 or 10 seconds. And when he put that attack in to get himself there, and when he was going up that climb, I was off the sofa. You know, come on, Fred, come on. I wanted him to hang on so badly, and he did. And as you saw, the emotion as he crossed the line, not just for that big win, but of course, he'd had a very emotional couple of weeks with the loss of his teammate. And, you know, we saw him point to the sky. We saw just what it meant to him. And I think anybody that watches road racing will look at that race on that day and just say, wow, he deserved that. He was the best rider on the day. But if you look at that, perhaps even top 10, incredible. The riders that we're seeing from the World Tour teams in that top 10, for you to walk away, I think on that day, having beaten them all to take that win, you absolutely have earned the right to ride those stripes over the coming year.
Yeah, I mean, if the purpose of the course is to decide the strongest rider in the race, well, it certainly did that. And while we've talked already about the podium finishes, I think we should also give massive credit to Connor Swift, who was a protagonist almost until the very end. It was our podium finishers, of course, who went, you know, almost together up Saltburn Bank for the final time. But Swift had been the agent provocateur for the previous lap, and he dragged himself back into contention after being dropped on the final lap too. I mean, this was Connor Swift in the raw, wasn't it? His entire career, in a sense, captured in one race. The rider who grew up on the domestic scene, the rider crowned British champion in the colours of Madison Genesis, you know, the last rider from a domestic team to win the elite British road race title. But with all that polish, all that endurance that's come with 5 years in the UCI World Tour.
Yeah, another rider that, again, as I saw him get dropped, I was off the sofa. Come on, Connor, you can do it. Get yourself back. And you saw him as he got dropped on one of the climbs, and then he rode himself back. And I thought, oh, he's going to get back there. But I thought, if he gets to Saltburn, he's going to get dropped anyhow. The three ultimate podium riders were looking the strongest on the day. But all credit to him. I thought he put in a fantastic shift. But even earlier in the race, people like Owain Doyle, I mean, he was really also looked very, very up for it on the day. He came in fourth in the end, but you could see he was very active right at the beginning of the race, wasn't he? Very, very active. Also, people like Luke Rowe, you could see doing his sort of traditional team road captain stuff. He was on the front a bit. There was a couple of bits in the race that I saw where Luke was sort of surfing. You can just see the ease he goes from the front to the back and through the peloton. That's all those years of World Tour riding that he's done. But there was a couple of lovely moments when I just saw him drift to the back, and he actually helped a couple of the domestic riders get back into the bunch and things like that. And I just thought, do you know what? That is absolutely brilliant to see. You know, he's clearly not come to win it today. He's come to work for people. But what he's doing is also making sure that the race was raced really, really well. So all credit to Luke Rowe. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Rowe is a class act, isn't he? And if you were a young rider, what couldn't you learn from racing against him? What an advert, Phil, for British cycle sport. I mean, for me, that's the biggest takeaway of this entire championships. I'm sure we've all watched the Tour de France Unchained recently on Netflix. Very high gloss presentation of the biggest race in professional cycling. But if you wanted to take a single race as a microcosm of domestic racing, that no prisoners taken style characterises the domestic scene, well, you couldn't have a better advert than what we witnessed on Sunday. It was absolutely brutal, utterly unpredictable, and yet still somehow managed to crown the strongest rider in the race. I think the year ahead is going to seem very long. The 2024 National Road Race Championships can't come quickly enough, because those we've just witnessed were absolutely brilliant. Well, we're certainly not going to be starved of action until next year's National Road Championships. The National Circuit Series is the next act onto the domestic stage. That starts tonight, Wednesday, June the 28th, the day we're recording. It will already have passed into history by the time this episode is published. Such is the pace of peak season cycling. And we'll be covering the National Circuit Series in our next episode. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. It's been great to talk again about this wonderful sport that Brother UK supports as a dedicated sponsor, both of teams and races. If people want to follow you on social media, Phil, how can they go about that?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter. That's probably the best place. And my handle there is at RoadPhil, P-H-I-L, all one word. And I'm always posting bits and bobs there. And if you want to follow me there, I will be heading out to the Tour de France to watch the finish as a guest of Ineos, courtesy of an auction prize I bought at the Reina dinner some while ago. So that should be exciting. I'll try and see what I can get and post from being inside the bubble on the final day of the Tour de France 2023.
Well, that sounds like an episode by itself, Phil. I mean, do fire up the phone at every opportunity. Capture whatever you can. Also worth following the Brother UK-sponsored Velo UK website in the weeks ahead. That, as we mentioned earlier, is Larry Higmott, who's covered the domestic scene for 20 years. You can find him on Twitter, at Velo UK, and at Aussie Larry, on Facebook, at Velo UK, and on Instagram, at Velo UK website. You can also follow Brother Cycling. We're at Brother Cycling on all three channels. Phil, thank you very much again for joining me, and thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.